The following program is an exclusive Disruption Networks production.
Disruption Network and First Source Federal Credit Union have teamed up to help support the Central New York Veterans Outreach Center Sunday, April 28th from noon to 4 p.m. Located at the Veterans Outreach Center, 726 Washington Street in Utica. There will be food, live entertainment, raffles, live podcasting from the D, and an appearance by Audie from the Utica Commons. We are looking for donations of clothes, non-perishable food items, furniture, toiletries, hygiene products, or a minimal cash donation of $5 at the door day of event. All ages are welcome. For more information on donation, drop-off locations, and entertainment lineup, please check out DisruptionNetwork.net. Disrupting Hunger, Sunday, April 28th, brought to you by First Source Federal Credit Union.
Tax season is here, and First Source wants to help you be prepared. Our friends at Furley, Moran, Freer, and Isa have given us some great tax tips to share. Read the blog at fsource.org for helpful answers to your tax questions and feel better prepared before you file. First Source members can also receive a discount on TurboTax software. Be ready for tax season with help from your friends. File smarter, live smarter with First Source. Membership requirements apply. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey, baseball fans, are you counting down the days to opening day? Well, Disruption Network has you covered. The Baseline, the D-Zone baseball podcast, is back with Season 2 and all new episodes all season long, Sunday nights, 7:30 p.m. on the D. Get your baseball fix as JP and SPG run down the news and notes around Major League Baseball. Get fantasy tips, player rankings, team previews, interviews, and more. You can catch the Baseline and all of Disruption Network's programming by checking out DisruptionNetwork.net, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, YouTube, Facebook, and Stitcher. Keep it inside the Baseline all season long, only on the D.
Hey, it's Cassidy, and you're listening to Disruption Network.
So you just bought your dream home, and now it's time to move. Let's face it, nobody likes to move. All the packing, unpacking, lifting, upstairs, downstairs, and broken everything, including your back. Let the professionals at EJA Moving Company take all the stress and pain out of your move. Competitively priced moving, relocation services, office moves, and complete packing and unpacking services. They work with everybody to make it simple and easy for you to move and relocate. Call EJA Moving Company at 315-335-0516. When it's time to relocate, have EJA Moving do all the work for you. Hit them up online, ejamoving.com.
Hey, Disruption Network, this is Mike Sacco, the general manager at Nye Volkswagen of Rome. If you don't know me by name, it's only because you have not received the best deal. There's only one reason to leave Utica, and that's to come see me in Rome and get the best deal on your next new, pre-owned, or certified VW. Mention that you heard this ad from Disruption Network and receive $250 off your next vehicle purchase. You'll know why our customers say, I love my Nye VW. Come see us at 5865 Rome Taberg Road in Rome, or visit us online at nyvwofrome.com.
The Property Sisters of the Mohawk Valley was born when three top producing agents with over 25 years of combined experience selling real estate joined forces to take real estate to the next level. We practice with honesty, integrity, and the knowledge to help make the buying and selling process easy and stress-free for all of our clients. We pledge to always make our clients our top priority from start to finish, and even after the house is closed. We will always be a valued resource for information and assistance for our buyers and sellers. Our customers over the years have become not only past clients, but great friends. As we join hands together as the Property Sisters of the Mohawk Valley, we look forward to serving our clients and our community and making a positive difference. You can reach us at 315-601-9630 for all of your real estate needs.
The Disruption Network is making moves. For upcoming events, news, interviews, and new daily programming, keep in the loop with us at DisruptionNetwork.net. Like, follow, and subscribe to all our social media. And check out all our podcasts on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. Get up on the D, DisruptionNetwork.net.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Glad you're here with us. Today we have a little bit of a different kind of a show. We're going to be doing a show talking about Ibogaine and an experience patients using Ibogaine to get rid of a little heroin addiction. So please meet my daughter, Emily Van Dyke.
Hello. Hi,
thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
So Emily has been very, very open about her journey and what she's been through and using Ibogaine and kind of how that treatment's been. So we're going to kind of talk to you like you've never heard this before and go right back to the beginning. So tell everybody a little bit about your addiction to start with.
Well, it started when I was like pretty young. I was like 11 when I started smoking weed, and by 13 it was like other stuff as well. And by the end of like my 17th year turning 18, I started using heroin. And it's just been like a nonstop struggle since then. But this Saturday it'll be 2 years since I've touched anything. You know, I still smoke weed here and there, you know what I mean? But that's just so I don't kill people. But, yeah, I was really sick, and I ended up in the hospital, and I almost died, and I was still doing the drugs in the hospital. I wasn't living a very healthy life. I had lost a lot of weight. I had scars all over my hands and my arms. I didn't have a relationship with my family. Didn't have a job. Didn't really have anybody at all, except for drugs. And then we found Ibogaine, and everything changed.
Yeah, it was a scary time. It was really scary. but yeah, Ibogaine kind of came to us when you were at your lowest point, and we really didn't think you were going to make it.
I didn't either.
Yeah, so, yeah, I had a meeting here with the guys when they were first starting up about doing a show, this show, and one of Emily's friends walked in and asked her how she was doing. And it was just that was all it took for me to break down and completely lose control and start crying. And, of course, have to explain myself after that and say, you know, let them know that, you know, what the problem was. And luckily I did, because Todd had heard of this on Law & Order SVU, of all places. And he asked if I had ever heard of Ibogaine. And of course I hadn't, so he explained it a little bit. And there was a ray of hope. Sounded too good to be true. I mean, it really does.
Yeah, honestly.
I mean, it's a one-time dose, and I mean, tell people a little bit about what the experience was.
It's very like euphoric, honestly. Like, you feel really happy. I remember like the whole time I was laughing pretty much, and just like, I don't know, I was in a good mood and I was laughing and happy. And you hallucinate, but it's not like scary or anything like that. Like, you just pretty much like go through your whole life and experience all these things over and over again, and you kind of get to, like, figure out what bothers you. You know what I mean? And kind of come to terms with your demons a little bit. And, like, essentially, like, get over them. And then you wake up and somehow you're a new fucking person. Like, new personality, new headspace, new mindset. Pretty much new body. I woke up the next morning and I didn't even recognize myself.
Yeah, I remember that very well. I remember you waking up and you looked in the mirror and you said, "Mom, do I look different?" And you didn't to me, but to you, you certainly did.
Yeah, I just felt right again. Mm. Felt normal.
And it was just that one time you had to take the medicine.
Yep. It was a few hours in the hospital, but it wasn't because, like, anything dangerous, but
it was because we were scared.
Just to watch your heart rate and dehydration is a risk of it, too. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, it was, I was more scared about it at first, because I watched a lot of videos on YouTube about it, and I had tripped before and I hated it, and I freaked out and I just did not like it, and it wasn't scary, like, at all. I wouldn't do it again, though, because it tasted so bad. It was wicked gross. But I wouldn't change anything.
Yeah, we were pretty scared of it, too. I mean, and that's why we took you to the emergency room, because we just,
it's scarier reading about it than it is going through it.
Yeah.
Like, indefinitely.
And it definitely was scary, but I knew that there was such a success rate with it that, and you were going to die. I mean, there really was no other alternative.
Risk a death from a complication from trying to save me or me dying with a needle in my arm.
No. Yeah, and that wasn't an option.
No.
Heroin wasn't going to win.
No. And I wasn't going to let it win.
No.
I came home before we even got the treatment in, and I was, like, dead set on waiting till it came in to come home because I didn't want to be sick.
You did. It took, like, 10 days for the medicine.
It was about 12 because I remember it was almost 2 weeks, and I was dying.
Yeah, it was tough.
And I went
through
all the withdrawal. I was ready before I did the Ibogaine. I was ready.
Yeah,
the
Ibogaine just kind of pushed you over the...
It gave me the tools that I needed to stay clean. I had it in me to, like, go through the withdrawal. I had done it before. I knew it would only be, like, a short time, and it wouldn't be so bad anymore. But, I don't know, it just wasn't worth it to stay out getting high for the 2 weeks that we were waiting.
I think the Ibogaine kind of helps address some of the issues that cause you to use as well, you know, some of the depression issues.
The big part is the way that it rebuilds your opiate receptors in your brain. Because that's what keeps you going back, is that just little click of you just need that edge taken off, you know?
Right.
Because I went, maybe the longest I had gone, like if I'm being generous without it before, was maybe a month, 3 weeks, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I just couldn't do it, you know? And I haven't had an urge to do coke, meth, crack, heroin, fentanyl, nothing. Not a thing. In 2 years.
That's a miracle.
When it was something that I had done every single day consistently since I was 16 years old. 2 years.
That's huge.
It is huge. I wake up every morning. And I get to see my family every day. I get to spend my birthdays at home. I get to experience Christmas with my family, which I didn't really get to do because I was always so fucked up. I have a good job. I hate my life there sometimes, you know what I mean? But
that's work.
That's work. Everyone hates their job. And if you say you love your job, you're a fucking liar. Like, absolutely no one loves their job that much. But I don't know. I have a reason to wake up now. I wake up and I'm like, I can do fucking anything that I want because I don't have to worry about not being sick to do it.
Right.
I'm sorry for getting emotional.
It's an emotional subject. I mean, bringing up everything. I mean, I know we've talked about it before, but we haven't talked about it in a while. And it does. It's a lot.
Yeah, because, like, I'd love to sit here and say that, like, everything's 100% okay. And everything's great and life is so wonderful. No, but it's not.
Well, life is never perfect.
But the kicker is like, I deal with it now in a healthy way. I don't just say, I don't want to feel this emotion and go get high about it. I deal with it, you know? Sober people who are on drugs, we all have bad days. But it's how you deal with that bad day that counts.
Yes.
Like, Ibogaine isn't, like, the do-all, fix-all. Like, there's still emotional things that you're going to have to deal with.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, like, I've
just
suffered
one of the
from
tools.
Depression and anxiety my whole life. And it made it a lot better, but it didn't take it away.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I still work on.
Right.
And I still have, you know, insecurities and everything like that. And I have my moments where I'm really weak and all I want to do is sleep. But at least in my weak moments, I'm not going out and killing myself. It's like, it's hard to, like, put it into words. Like, sometimes I don't really know what to say. But.
But I think that's just life, though, because we all have, you know, times where we're less happy or more happy and just need to close ourselves off from the world and reboot a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's just normal. You're just experiencing normal for the first time in a very long time.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
And life is always a process for anybody, not just addicts. I mean, everybody, it's, you know, waves and peaks and valleys and good days and bad. And that's how it goes.
Yeah. I'm just glad that I can use my experience and everything to, like, put it out there and show people that there is a way out, and it's not that hard. All you got to do is believe in yourself. Mm-hmm. And like, I was hanging out with a friend of mine the other day, and someone had called them. It was a sibling of theirs who's been on and off drugs for a long time. And they were like talking about the 12-step program and how if you want to get clean, you need God and all this other stuff. And like, I understand the 12-step program, but believing in God didn't get me anywhere. I believed in God for a long time. And I was very religious, and I went to church every Saturday. Mm-hmm. You know, I liked it, and I grew to not. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of things in my life really steered me away from religion. And when I steered myself away from religion, I needed something to believe in. And honestly, like, I don't think believing in God does anything for a person. You should believe in yourself. If you believe that you can do it, you can do it, and you're going to.
Well, for some people, God is, you know, a strength. And, well, you know, I mean, it doesn't work for everybody,
like,
but...
I mean it as in, like, even if you're not like me. Like, I mean, even if you're like me, where you don't have a religious belief to believe in, is what I'm saying is, like, you just need to believe in something.
Right, and do
the work. Believing in yourself is your best bet, because you are your God. Mm-hmm. You make all your decisions. You have to live this life. There's no spiritual figure sitting there physically talking to you and telling you what to do. Like, you got to figure that out on your own.
Yeah.
If you believe in your higher power, like, honestly, more power to you. At least you believe in something. I'm not saying, like, don't believe in God, but I'm just, like, helping people who are like me relate. And, you know, because when I went to rehab, I didn't believe in God at all. And I still really, like, kind of don't. I'm not going to lie to you, but... The whole time you're there, they just throw it down your throat. God, 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 12-step program, 12-step program. I didn't follow any of the 12-step program. I could not recite them to you if I tried. I would have to read them off a pamphlet. And here I am, 2 years clean, without that.
But some people need that.
I know, but I'm just saying.
I know, it's not the route for everybody.
You don't have to.
No, and you've been in rehab, inpatient, outpatient. None of that worked for you either.
Nothing worked for me except for me.
You're a rebel.
It is what it is, but, like...
Oh, God, help me.
The whole like, basis of that conversation isn't to, like, bash God or religion or anything. It's just to say,
to show,
like,
there's another route that you don't have to.
Like, if you don't believe and you go to rehab and you're like, well, they're saying I need this program and God and to believe in a higher power to get better, and I don't, and I don't know what to do, I'm never going to get better. Because that's what I thought. I'm like, I can't just up and believe in something that has let me down in the past. You know what I mean? Like, I had a rough life, and a lot of bad things happened to me, and a lot of bad things that I've done, and I felt like he wasn't there. So how am I going to believe in something that doesn't believe in me?
Well, yeah, who let me go through? Just like you said, he's not physically there telling you what to do. Maybe he was guiding you, and you were ignoring him.
You're probably right.
You ignore things sometimes.
Yeah. But I don't know. I think that, like, if you can't force yourself to believe in the 12-step program or God or whatever, just believe in yourself. Believe that you can do it, and you will. Because for a long time, I said to myself, I can't do it. There's no fucking way. It's like, that's not happening. It can't happen. I'm too far gone. I've been fucked up for so long, it's not happening. And then I was just like, heard about Ibogaine, and I watched the videos, and I'm like, I could fucking do it. I just need a little help. And there's nothing wrong with asking for a little bit of help once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely nothing.
And that's kind of how I like to think of it, is it's that help that you need. Mm-hmm. That push to, you know.
It's just someone,
it just quiets your body, the withdrawal symptoms. And
it's like having a parent hold your hand when you're walking across the street, like when it's a busy intersection, and you know that they're not going to let you get hit. They're going to be there. That's your backbone. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I could have done it without the Ibogaine, but I don't think I would have lasted as long. And I don't think I'd still be sober today. I really don't. Like, and that's just me being, like, blatantly honest. I had such a hard time before getting clean.
Mm-hmm.
I needed help. I needed something just to, you know, just keep me okay.
Right. To repair those receptors.
Methadone was not an option. Suboxone was not an option. Subutex, not an option. I didn't want that. I didn't want something that's going to fuck me up more in the long run. Because detox from those are way more severe than from heroin. And, you know, the people want to open up, like, you know, a methadone clinic in Rome. For what? You're making the problem so much worse. So much worse.
Yeah, I don't agree with it either. I think they should open an Ibogaine clinic, but...
I do too, but...
That's just me.
Yeah. But the government would shut that down immediately because it takes too much money.
Listen,
away.
All we need is a couple politicians on board and things can change.
Yeah, let's just hope we get them on board.
I know, because there's just been too much
lately. I'm
sick and
tired of watching my friends and family die.
So Todd Williams is saying he's very proud of you. And then Lori DiNardo, Emmy, you rock. Addie, lots of love going out to you for doing this show with Emmy. So, well, it has to be done. I mean, people have to know that this is an alternative.
People need to know that there's a way out and that it's possible.
And it's, I mean, it's used worldwide. I mean, Africa, Europe, Canada, Mexico, Costa Rica.
On YouTube, you know, I watch my YouTube videos and I can't remember what vlog it was, but it was like a big YouTuber. I mean, like 38 million views a video, and they talked about ayahuasca, and I like immediately commented.
Was that Joe Rogan?
Yeah. Joe Rogan. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about how he did ayahuasca and everything like that. And I'm like, you see, like, why aren't people paying attention? Why are people watching their loved ones die?
He did a show on Ibogaine too.
I know. Like, open your fucking eyes though. Like, if everyone thinks that heroin and fentanyl and all this shit is such a big problem and there's such a huge war on drugs, why don't we open up our fucking computers and read an article? Just one. Because for the most part, every Ibogaine article I've ever seen is the same, and I've never seen a bad one. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever seen one slamming it, saying that it's a bad fucking drug.
No, me neither.
Never. Not once. All you got to do is look it up.
Videos all over the place. BBC has great.
Ibogaworld.com. Yep. Get it yourself. If your government's not going to help you and your doctors aren't going to help you, help yourself. Mm-hmm. Get out there and take the initiative to jumpstart getting your life back.
Yeah. Not that I'm saying to break the law, but...
Break the fucking law.
I smuggled it in. I mean, if it's between your loved one dying or, you know...
A couple years in prison, fuck it.
Well, one person's been convicted that I know of. I've done some research, and only one person's been convicted, and it's because he was handing it out in the streets of New York City, you know, with no supervision, no education, no nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, so, I mean, really, I stood in front of, you know, the chief of police, the county DA, the sheriff. Mm-hmm. None of them batted an eye. They just kind of laughed at me when I said I smuggled it in.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, Ibogaine's illegal, but so is heroin. And you got that every day.
And heroin fucking kills people.
Yeah, and you got it every day. You know what I mean? So I took a shot that one time I could get it into the country and not get caught.
Yeah, and it worked. Took it. And look at us now.
Yeah.
You
best decision
you
I ever
have
made.
Two daughters. So.
I was awfully nervous about it, but it was the best decision. I just couldn't think of another. There was no choice. Once I knew it existed, I don't think there was anything that would stop me from getting it.
Yeah,
I told them, I said, do I have to fly over and get it? I'll fly over and pick it up. I don't care. You know, I was ready to do whatever.
Yeah, and honestly, like, if I could go back in time and never pick up another drug, I would. I would pick it up again. I would do this all fucking over again.
You would, even knowing what you know now?
Yeah, absolutely. If it meant that I would end up in this spot right here helping other people, abso-fucking-lutely.
You would go through it again.
Absolutely.
Because
I've already saved how many lives now telling my story, and people have given it to their family members. Mm-hmm. Aunt Lulu tells me about a new person every other month that she tells about it.
Somebody calls me every single day, at least one person every day.
Mm-hmm. And every person day. That I've heard of that's done it, except for one person. But I think that there was a completely different scenario as to why it didn't work for them. Because I think they were still, I think they had drugs in their system. Mm-hmm. But you have to be 48 hours drug-free. Like, you cannot have anything in your system whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even weed. I didn't smoke weed for a week before, you know. Or 3 or 4 days, I think.
Yeah.
But
Yeah, you need to be clean.
I don't think I've ever heard of anyone other than that one person go back. Mm-hmm. I don't. I haven't.
No, me neither.
Not a single person has gone back that I know of other than one person. Mm-hmm. And that was because it wasn't taken correctly.
Yeah, but that's pretty good odds. You know, just the amount of people that we know.
One in 10, at least.
Oh, more than 10.
Yeah, but that's just, right. I know of 10, kind of.
Right.
But it's like.
Yeah, because we had 10 doses.
Well, no, but like, I mean, people who went out and got it themselves.
Right.
You know, like, yeah. Two or three of Lulu's friends. My friend Tony from, I was friends with him when I was like in fifth grade, sixth grade. Mm-hmm. And he did it, and he's been clean for a month. He's got a kid, you know, and mm-hmm. things are going well for him.
That's awesome.
It's fucking incredible. Mm-hmm. It really is. Like, and it warms my heart. Like, when I read his comment, I started crying. Mm. You know someone from when they're, like, little.
Yeah.
And then you find out that they've lived that life, and, like, all you can do is, like, sit and think about everything that's gone on in your life, and you're like, they're going through the same exact fucking thing.
Yeah, his dad must have went right out and got it, because it was only how long ago?
His parents always loved me. Always.
Well, you're lovable.
Every time I went over there, it was, oh, hi, how are you, blah, blah, blah. Like, they found me on Facebook, like, his mom and dad, after he found me on Facebook and added me, and then they took it upon themselves to, they saw me on his Facebook, and they added me, too. And then it was, 2.5 months ago, his dad had reached out to me and was asking me about Ibogaine and everything about it and where he can find it and everything. And I told him, and thankfully, you know, he got it in time to save his son.
It's amazing.
And now he's got the whole rest of his life to look forward to. Instead of looking forward to waking up in the morning sick, having to fucking rob, cheat, and steal to try to get dope.
Every day is bright and opportunity.
Mm-hmm. You might wake up wishing that you didn't, but at least you're not sick.
And I just, you know, I just can't, I mean, I don't know why we can't have it legalized. It just kills me. Because it doesn't just do heroin addiction. I mean, it's
for addiction. There's a grocery list of things.
Yeah, PTSD, bipolar disorder, depression.
No, was it schizophrenia?
I think all, like, I don't think there's a mental defect that it doesn't.
It just, like, rewires you and changes you, like, your mental chemistry. Mm-hmm. I went from, like, literally spending all day and all night in my bed or on a couch watching YouTube videos. Like, literally, that's mm-hmm. all I did. Or I would get up to do my makeup, smoke a cigarette, and then I'd sit on the couch mm-hmm. with a full face of fucking makeup on, watching
doing
YouTube
nothing.
Videos, doing absolutely nothing. I had no friends. Mm-hmm. I didn't do anything. I didn't even have friends until 2 months in to being clean. Because everyone was so afraid that I was going to go back, and they didn't want to, like, set their hopes up too high mm-hmm. just to be let down.
Because it's hard.
All those motherfuckers.
Hard.
I showed every single motherfucker who didn't
and
believe
keep,
in me.
Keep showing them.
I'm going to. Everyone
but
who
it's
has
hard.
Doubts
it's,
right now.
It's hard to live with an addict, though.
It is, and I understand that. And
but
you know,
I had faith
I know
in
that
you.
There are
I
still
you
things that
it.
People are concerned about. You know what I mean? Like, that's just how it's going to be for a while. Mm-hmm. I could be 10 years sober, and you guys could still potentially be nervous every time I leave the house.
You could be 100 years sober, and I will always be afraid that somebody or something's going to take you from me. It's just being
that.
A mother.
And I know, I don't know if, like, you have those concerns now, and, like, if you do, I understand. But,
I
like,
think
I'm sure there's, like, a little spot in the back of your mind every time I leave the
house. That will
always
be there. Not so much every time you leave the house. I think I haven't really thought about it in a long time, honestly. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm thinking, like, if something really traumatic happens in your life, you know, God forbid a death or whatever, I think at those moments I'll be worried about you.
Mm. But,
you know,
I've
but it's not so much.
Twice in the
yeah.
last 3 months, I'm not going back,
no,
especially since
yeah.
that's how it just makes you want to fight more. You know?
I know. But I just,
it's
not.
It makes me feel guilty, though. Because I got out and I couldn't help them.
I know. Me too.
I
go.
I can't think that way.
It's survivors. It's a real, very real thing, though.
It's
survivor's
guilt.
Yeah. And I have that a lot when I know parents that have lost somebody to I have that so much. Like, now you're going to make me cry.
I'm sorry. Every time I see a post, though.
I know. Me too. Me too.
It, like, cuts a little piece out of me.
Like, if I ordered more Ibogaine, I could have gave it to them. Or if it, you know, if I fought harder. I don't know.
If you knew what was going on.
Yeah. And I think that's a lot of it, is so many of us don't talk. I mean, I knew you had an addiction for how long? I knew you had an addiction for how long? And it took you being in the hospital gray. I mean, you were gray. You were dying. I knew you were not going to live. It took that for me to get angry enough at heroin instead of you to find this. Because if I didn't get so pissed off and decide that I was going to find the answer, I never would have had this situation happen. Mm-hmm. You know, where Todd goes to me, hey, have you ever heard of Ibogaine? No, I've never heard of it. Who the hell has?
Yeah, no one. Because it doesn't make enough money.
No, and that's a very sad fact.
People would rather watch everyone's loved ones die than actually take the initiative and be like, listen.
There's a lot of money.
We might be losing money on methadone and Suboxone and everything, but they're not thinking of the bigger picture. You know how much better the economy will get? If all these fucking people who are so fucked up on drugs that they cannot physically get up and get out of bed to go to work, you know how much better it'll be if they mm-hmm. get clean and all get jobs? Because mm-hmm. guess what? When you have jobs and you're not spending all your money on drugs, you're going to stores, you're buying yourself clothes, right?
Going out to eat.
You're going out to eat, right? Mm-hmm. You're buying yourself a new car, getting an apartment. Where do you think all those taxes go? To the fucking government. Lose a little bit of money on that, but in the long run, you're going to make a hell of a lot more with the ex-addicts who are getting up and taking the extra initiative mm-hmm. because they know how hard it was and they have something to work for.
And I also, let's talk about the fact that, you know, not every addict is homeless. I mean,
yeah,
the doctors created this. You know, I mean, pharmaceutical companies were giving them kickbacks for prescribing their pain pills. And, you know, I mean, this has been proven how many times.
I heard something where, like, OxyContin used to send, like, gifts mm-hmm. to doctors' offices
oh, yeah.
to bribe them to prescribe mm-hmm. it. And I saw all these, like, I saw an infomercial for it, and it's like, OxyContin changed my life. And then it's like they go and they review these people mm-hmm. and tell their lives again, and the only ones who weren't dead were the ones who had, like, debilitating physical disabilities that gave them chronic pain every mm-hmm. single day. Those are the only people who didn't die.
And it's crazy.
It was two people. One had been in a car accident and couldn't speak. Like, she sounded like she had a severe stroke or could have been deaf. Like, that's how she talked. And she's still alive, from what I know. And she's like, you know, OxyContin did help me. But she's like, but you got to use
it
correctly.
There's definitely uses for it. But, I mean, it's so overprescribed and so overused. I mean, when I broke my ankle, they gave me 10 milligrams every 4 hours. Mm-hmm. So that was 6 pills a day. Or no, let's see. How many? Yeah, 6 pills a day.
It's insane.
Like 60 milligrams of that a day. Like, holy shit.
And expecting people not to get sick from it.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And Todd makes a good point. In 1967, U.S. made Ibogaine illegal because of its hallucinogenic properties. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, you're right. It's not addictive, and people don't want to do it again. I mean, it's not one of those things that you need to... Yeah, you don't ever feel... I mean, you could take, you know, what do they call it? Microdoses.
Yeah. But I don't need to.
But, right. I mean,
if you don't need it, why are you going to do it?
Right. So, but you know I mean, so it's, yeah, it is. It's money and politics.
It really is.
So unfortunate.
It's quite frankly repulsive.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
It makes me sick to my stomach.
I agree. I mean, it can be anybody. If you have an injury, you can become an addict.
But do you want to know what it's going to take to get a politician on board?
One of their
kids is going to have to die.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's
not
sad.
Trying to be,
it's sad.
I'm not trying to be, like, you know, negative or pessimistic or anything, but it's the truth.
It's sad.
No one cares until it happens to them.
Yep.
Or to someone they love.
And you can't tell me that these politicians don't have children that are addicts.
Or doing
something come
crazy.
On.
It's kind of like,
you know, it's
a child of a cop. There's one kid that I know, his dad's a cop in Frankfurt. This kid is, like, one of the biggest drug addicts I know.
It's sad.
It is sad. It's heartbreaking. You know what I mean? Like, you can only imagine how tough he is on him.
There's so much, you know, of it around. And how many overdoses last month? I mean, Z and Nicole were just talking about it. I mean, it's astronomical.
Nothing, but two of them were two people that I'm close to.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm just, like, sick and tired of every time I go on Facebook, I see someone else has passed away.
Yeah.
When there's something that could have saved them. But no one wants to talk about it. Everyone's afraid. I'm not.
No,
why
I'm
are
not.
You? I'm afraid to walk into a fucking store by myself to buy a pack of smokes.
I know. That's what surprises me so much.
I go into a fully blown panic attack walking into a store. Mm. Having to talk to somebody freaks me out. And I'm sitting here like, I know it's because I'm like not physically in front of anyone but you, but I'm talking about it. I'm not scared. I'm sweating my balls off because I'm nervous because there's cameras on me and shit. But like, you know, you can't be afraid and you can't be worried about what other people are going to think of you and your family, because at least you're taking the initiative to try and get them help. You're putting your story out there.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's got one. Mm-hmm. If more people came forward about it and talked about it, other people would feel more comfortable.
And that's
because it's like,
yeah,
you've gone through that too. You can relate to something, it's easy.
That was exactly why we did this the first time and right up until now.
Well, if
2 years
gonna
later,
talk about it, who the fuck is?
Yeah,
because I don't hear anyone talking about
you
it but me or you.
Yeah,
or Z.
Somebody has to, you know, start, you know, being real
open
about it and saying,
like,
you know,
start it.
This is what I went through. This is how I got through it.
And this is me now.
Yeah. And
what's up?
You know, but the more we talk about it, the more people hear about it, the more people that do it, the more the word spreads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because just think, look at us. Now, if you think that every person that we've been able to help, now they've been able to help people,
mm-hmm,
and they've been able to help people, you know,
and
it's
so on
it's
and so forth.
Yeah, it's just going to keep expanding.
I just wish it would expand faster, you know.
Me too, but we're kind of like, you know, this little hole where there's just no ibogaine. It's all around us, Mexico, Costa Rica, Europe,
mm-hmm,
and Canada, and we're just the only ones that don't see fit to make it legal and available. Well,
it really is, like,
and this point,
I don't like him and I don't agree with fucking 99.9999999% of the shit that comes out of his mouth, but I think if Trump knew about ibogaine, with him being as against heroin as he says that he is, I think he would push to make it legal, honestly. And this is like one
There's
of the
no
biggest
money in
fucking
it.
Scumbags that
There's
I've
no
ever fucking
money
seen
in
my
it.
Life.
There's no money in it.
No, I'm just saying, you want to end the drug war. You want to end people going out and getting all fucked up. Here's your tool. Here's the shovel. Start digging the hole. Bury addiction.
I
Get
said that
fucking rid of it.
I said that to somebody who was running for office, and I said, you know what? You don't need to do anything else but tell people there's hope for their addicts, and that's all you need to do.
It's true.
I mean, because you just walk down the street, and anyone you look at has a friend, a relative, a colleague, somebody they
Boyfriend,
know that's
sister.
Suffering from addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody that they know. They might not like them, they may like them, but they know somebody.
Well, it's so bad now that every single person on the world is either going through it or knows someone who is.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a single person who can confidently say, I don't know anyone who does drugs. Because that's a fucking lie. Everyone does them now.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone. I see people bragging about doing Xanax and fucking, still to this day, I see people bragging about doing hydros, and I'm like, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are you doing? Like, you are setting yourself up to have such a miserable life. And, like, I know I'm one to talk, but, like, people go out there and they see how hard it is for an addict. And they still get that little curiosity, and they're like, let's just try it. It's not going to happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? No one's invincible.
Yeah.
I didn't think I would get addicted. I just wanted to try it the one time, see what all the hype was about.
More trouble has started because it's not going to happen to me. Yeah.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
That can't happen to me. That doesn't happen to people like me. Doesn't happen in areas like this.
Mm-hmm. And that's it's totally true because people think, you know, people addiction it's for the it's for the poor.
It's just shit
it's
that
for the rich.
On,
it's for
what
you know.
Happens on TV. It doesn't happen in real life. And like
until they go out and they're playing sports
away.
And
like if you don't out of sight, that's the out of sight out of mind attitude that gets people into this situation in the first place. Oh, I don't see it, so it doesn't matter. Well, it's still there and it's still happening and it's getting worse and worse. Because if you see something's on fire, there's a trash can full of papers on fire and it's next to a curtain. You just look away. Oh, it's not on fire. I can't see it. So it must not be there. Your fucking house is going to burn down pretty fucking quickly. I'm just saying. If you keep ignoring it, like that infection, it's going to get worse and you're probably going to get gangrene.
It is. It's a cancer and it's just spreading.
Yeah. And
it
it's
really
getting
is.
Worse and worse and worse. It's going from type 2 to type 3 to type 4. Honestly, it's fucking killing everybody.
I know.
And like, I can't speak for everyone in the world, but I can speak for me and you. And I know I'm fucking sick of it. I know you're sick of it.
Yeah, I don't want to see any more of this.
No, I'm
it's
over it.
It's too much.
It like takes too much out of me emotionally because I relate to that. And it could have been me who was found dead.
That's what I think every single time.
It could have been my daughter. I think about it every single day.
Stop thinking about it.
Well, I get flashbacks just about every day of situations like a certain smell, like dad's cologne. When I was using, I used to steal squirts of his cologne because I was such a bum. I didn't wash my clothes ever and I didn't want to smell like fucking mildew. So now I smell his cologne and it just, it does, it's not like a bad feeling. You know what I mean? Like,
right, but it just brings back a memory.
Relief, but it just like brings me back to like, like even fall time, like around October, the smell of the dead leaves reminds me of going to get drugs. And like I never like have those feelings like I'm gonna go out and actively use. I just think about it sometimes. Not about
that,
using, but
no,
I think
but
about
you were,
the act and like
how you
what's
used to
been
do
going
that.
On in different scenarios and situations. It's never like, oh, I'm thinking about it, I gotta go get high.
Right.
It's just things that I think about. You know what I mean? Like I've got a lot of guilt because of the things I've done. And I don't think that's going to go away. You know what I mean? I'm always going to feel that way.
With time, it'll get easier.
Yeah, it has gotten a little easier. But, I don't know, it's hard sometimes. But that's just life. Like, life sucks and life is shitty sometimes. But I've got a good support system. You know, I've got good friends, all two of them. I mean,
all the both of them.
Yeah, you know, I've,
well,
I've got
you
good
have
friends.
Us.
Yeah, but you guys aren't friends, you're family.
Yeah, sorry
it's
about
different.
That. You're stuck.
Yeah, but, you know, I've got good friends, a good job. My life is good. Like, it's not anything tragic, you know. It's shitty. I'm not a millionaire and I'm not a model, but...
Yeah, I'm could not, be worse.
Yeah, I'm not 6 feet under, you know.
And you have a job and you have a car and... You have a roof over your head.
I can put gas in that car.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, I mean, you get to do some fun stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
You have your kayaking.
Yeah, if it ever hits spring. If it doesn't stay winter till June.
It's coming. It's coming. So I want to just go back once again and just touch on maybe the experience of using the Ibogaine a little bit more and a little bit more in depth, just for people who... You know, like me, I was terrified giving it to you. I had absolutely no idea what to expect. Like, I've never tripped before in my life. And so for me, when they said it was going to be some kind of, you know, like a trippy effect, I could only think of dragons coming out of the wall. And
it's
oh, my God,
like
I was going to be right there with you and I was going to protect you from whatever was coming to get you.
No,
and
it's just kind of it's not a scary trip. It's like.
I'll go through it just from like taking it right on through.
Well, I took it in a way that you probably shouldn't take it. I mixed it with apple juice and maple syrup, and it was repulsive.
Yeah,
tasted like a bottle of Windex was poured down my throat. Not very good. But you're supposed to lay down after you take it and be like relaxed, because otherwise you can puke. And I puked a couple times because
we were nervous
we
and
were,
we took
well,
it
we
to
were
the
stuck
ER
waiting in the waiting room, and I kept having to get up and down to do things, and I'm like, I just want to lay here, like I can't keep moving, I'm gonna fucking puke. But that was just because I was like moving around a lot. Once I laid down, I was fine. but it's not like intense visuals. It's kind of like you're having a dream, where you're dreaming about your past life and just like weird childhood memories. Like, it's hard to explain because it's different for everybody else.
Well, when we were first talking about it, you said it was kind of like looking into a mirror at whatever situation was going on, and
it was kind of like being like an angel, like just floating over, watching your loved ones do whatever. But it's like, instead of watching over your loved ones, you're watching over yourself, and you're just like watching all these things. And like, I can't really remember like exactly what I saw, to be honest, because it was just like brief little flashes of everything, you know. And it was pretty quick that I felt like it went by. I felt like I was only going through it for like an hour, maybe. And it wasn't intense. I didn't get ill. Like, within 40 minutes, I didn't have like restless legs. I wasn't fidgeting and trying to get myself comfortable. I was just like laughing like an idiot. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But it wasn't anything crazy. Like, it was a hallucinating, but it was almost just like you were dreaming.
Right.
Just having a weird dream.
It was very peaceful, like, from our end.
Yeah, I don't really remember talking too much.
Yeah, once like, the nurses got you settled into the room.
And stopped bugging me every 5 minutes.
They called poison control, and once they, you know, knew that poison control said that they had seen no adverse effects and just monitor and give fluids and let you go home, I think that kind of, like, settled them down. Mm-hmm. And you were just very quiet and peaceful. You know, you really didn't move much. And then, you know, they let us go and you got to the car and you just kind of went home and you laid down on the couch, I think.
Out on the sun porch. Yeah, I laid on the couch, and then you guys made me get up and go to my room.
And go to your room, yeah.
I woke up the next day and I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, you were just like,
I don't even know how to explain it, but I woke up and like colors were colorful. It's like the weirdest fucking thing. Like, I can't even describe it. It almost makes you feel like you lived your whole life in black and white. And then one day you wake up and you've got, like, color TV, you know, and you're just, like, looking around and you're like, holy fucking shit, that's green, that's blue, that's so, everything's so beautiful. And, like,
right.
The sun was shining, and honestly, it was one of the best days of my life, and I didn't do a fucking thing that day. I woke up and just, like, hung around the house.
Yeah, I remember spending that day with you.
Best days of my life. Honestly.
Yeah, you woke up and you literally looked in the mirror in the bathroom and you said, Mom, do I look different to you?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, you look different to you.
It was almost like seeing myself for the first time ever, because I was so clouded by, you know, addiction. And I every time I looked in the mirror, I was like, I fucking don't look good. Like, I think that's part of the reason why I don't really like leaving the house without makeup, is that, I don't know, it's just like weird looking at yourself sometimes.
You need your mask.
Yeah. Well, like, I don't know. It's weird because, like, it has a lot to do with, like, me being insecure and not being comfortable in my own skin, and I understand that. But I just get weird because I'm worried about, like, going to a store and running into somebody that I know.
Right.
And then they have to ask you in front of a room full of people, like, oh, how are you doing? Like, you okay? Like, kind of like how your cousin did that to me when I was on a date. In a restaurant full of people. And that's why I don't go out, though. That's why I don't like going around people, because I'm open about my story, but right, that's not all I want to talk about.
Right.
Like, ask me if I'm okay, and if I say yes, don't be like, are you really okay? I know you're on a date with a person you, like, just met and you just started talking to, but, like, I'm going to embarrass you and make you have to talk about it. For, like, 10
minutes.
That's
what family does.
Yeah, but she's I'm like, oh, my God, how embarrassing. And now this guy's going to be like, what are you, fucking dying or something? Like, that's just, like, my big fear is, like, I don't want to run into someone that I used to use with, and I don't want to run into someone who's going to make me talk about it in public. Like, in front of a microphone and in front of a camera is one thing.
Yeah, because, like, this isn't public at all.
Carpets, I'm sweating my ass off. It would be down to here if it was in person. Like, I'm not kidding. Like, when I was talking to Jenny when she came into Banu,
yeah,
I was sweating profusely, freaking out, because, like, I just feel weird talking about it in person. Because I don't know, like, as outgoing and crazy as I am with people I know, it's honestly the craziest thing. And a lot of people are like really shell-shocked by it. But when I'm in like a public setting where there's people that I don't know and like the general public's around, I shut off. And I like, I'm in my own little like bubble and I don't talk. I don't even make eye contact with people. Like I get so weird. And I was never like that before. You know, doing drugs changes you. Mm-hmm. Like you feel like you're not as fun being around people. I don't know. I just
it's
feel like
time.
I'm quieter.
You know? You'll get time mm-hmm. behind you. And the more time you have,
I guess
the more healing.
Worried that people aren't going to like me as much as they did.
Oh, no,
when
we like
I was
you better.
Still fun. Well, yeah, you. But like,
you are still fun.
I used to be like the life
you're
of the
more
party.
Fun.
Now I show up and I'm fucking weird around people and I'm like, I don't know.
You've already been weird.
Well, yeah, but like weird is in like not being able to talk. And then like 3 weeks into meeting me and we all hang out all the time. Everyone's like, holy shit, you're fucking funny. And they're like, why don't you talk? And I'm like, people make me fucking nervous.
Warm up.
Yeah, I just got to like warm up to people. I'm not high the first time I'm meeting you. So I'm not like out of my comfort zone.
Right.
That's how I used to be able to talk to people.
Yeah. It's a big adjustment.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's almost like night and day.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. Like, I went from being, like, so big and, like, flamboyant and out there, and, like, now I'm kind of just, like, chilled down. And
you're only mini flamboyant.
Yeah, I don't like to go out and party or anything. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like I feel uncomfortable around drugs, but it's just, like, an awkward thing when someone's like, hey, you want some coke? And you have to be like, no, I'm in recovery. I don't do that anymore. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not, like, a party conversation. So it's, I don't really like going out. Like, I will once in a while, but,
just
like,
don't hang
I go out
with
out,
people that do
I
coke.
I go out with you and Dad, you know? And it's not even that I hang out
we're
with
fun,
people
though.
Who do coke. It's like they'll have their friends who come around
right.
once in a while and they do it. And they'll be like,
right.
oh, you want a bump? And I'm like, no. And
well,
then
just
my
hang
friends
out with
jump
us.
To the defense and they're like, she's in fucking recovery. Don't even fucking ask her. Like have straight flipped
we
out
like
on
that.
People like in a bar. And I'm
it's
because
like, you
oh,
have good friends.
Yeah, I do have good friends. I do have a good friend. But I don't know. Like, it's just different. Life is just so different now. Mm. And not in a bad way. Mm. In a 100% good way.
Yeah. So let's talk about, like, do you remember, like, the first week or so after you had done it, after you'd done the ibogaine treatment?
Like, I don't remember too much about it.
Because they say, like, for a few days, you're a little foggy, too.
Yeah, and I remember that. I just, like, didn't want to get out of bed. I was just so tired.
Yeah, I had to force you to drink water. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, I just wanted to be left alone and just be with myself, mm-hmm. you know? It was, like, the first week really was just like a time for me to kind of reflect on things and think about what's going to happen next
mm-hmm.
and how I'm going to maintain a new life and like how I'm going to react to this new life and like what the fuck is going on. You know, I was like, I haven't been normal in such a long time. I don't even know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like when people are like, oh, let's hang out. What do you want to do? Let's do something fun. And I'm like,
you don't know.
What
you didn't remember
fun?
What was fun.
I'm like, I used to be able to just have fun doing nothing. Like, I'd be like, oh, let's go for a walk. Let's go for a hike, whatever. And now I'm like, I mean, we could watch a movie. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to do. Like, I would rather drive around for an hour than try to wrap my brain for something to do because I just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what sober people do. You know what I mean? Cause like
well, you do now.
Before,
I
well,
mean.
My idea of fun before was let's go to a party and get fucked up on drugs and get drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that was my fun, you know? So now I'm like, what do people do? Like, do I have to start knitting? I'm like, do I have to, like, take up crossword puzzles or whatever the hell it is, Sudoku? I'm like, I don't know what people do for fun. I was like, I don't know how to knit. I suck at rollerblading. I'll probably fall on my ass. But
roller derby would be good for you, though.
No, I wouldn't like that.
No?
No. I'm not aggressive.
Yeah, might bring you out of your shell.
Mm-mm, I don't want that. I like my shell. My shell keeps me safe.
Yeah. I'll take your shell. Your shell's good, then, if it keeps you safe.
Yeah, it does, you know? Like, when I'm out of my comfort zone is when I'm going to, you know, be fully myself and be, like, crazy bitch and, like, start jumping off of, like, roofs and shit, you know what I mean? So I just...
No.
I don't know. I like living my simple life now. Like, I always had to have someone to hang out with. I always had to have something to do. I always, 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 like, and if I didn't, I would have a panic attack and, like, feel like I was stuck, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, now, I would so much rather just, like, sit at home.
Go kayaking yourself.
Yeah, just...
I know.
I would rather be by myself than with a bunch of people. And, like, that's never been me, ever. And I don't know. Like, I like myself a lot more now.
That's a huge change.
Yeah. I mean, I still don't like myself that much. But it's a hell of an improvement from literally wishing myself dead every single day.
Yeah.
Now it's only about once a month.
Give me a smack.
No, but seriously, though, like... Life just gets so much better when you get better.
Right.
You know, like, if you're not good, your life's not going to be good. Mm-hmm. It is what it is. Like, it's a tough pill to swallow, but you got to get it down, get a glass of water.
Mm-hmm.
No one's going to do it for you.
No, it's so true, though. If you start making small changes, bigger changes occur.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you made a big change. So now all these smaller changes are occurring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting off the drugs, kind of, you got a job, you got a car, you
know. It was all in the matter of, like, 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything just kind of, like, and then I got really overwhelmed, and I was very emotional for a while, and I couldn't really handle it. And it took about a year and a couple months to, like, get out of that shell shock, you know, and, like, be comfortable going out and doing things.
Well, because you numbed your feelings for so many years, you know, that you didn't feel those normal emotions that come every day.
Yeah. And
so if you don't feel them, you don't know how to, and you don't know how to process them. So you're just left with all of this.
All of this, like,
stuff.
It's like a ball of energy just stuck in my chest. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on. Like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to think. I don't know what to say. Like, it was so... strange going from as fucked up as I was to sober. It was insane. Like,
and see, and that's one of the reasons I wish we really had an Ibogaine clinic here, because I think that if you had the full spectrum treatment, you know, the whole everything, I think you would have done even better. I mean, you did amazing, and don't get me wrong, I am incredibly proud of you. But I think you would have, I think you would have gotten more out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I wish there was one too. Like, even if I have to open it my fucking self, I really don't care. Like, I will.
We've got to get it made legal first.
Fuck them. Honestly, I'll open up a fucking donut shop. And I'll be giving people Ibogaine on the sly and be like...
Well, great. Now people are going to be watching for us to open a donut shop.
No, it's not going to be a donut shop. Who knows? It could be a hot dog fucking stand. I don't care, but someday it will be legal.
Yep.
And I'm going to fucking push it till it is.
Me too.
I'm not...
Every little questionnaire...
I'm not down to watch my family die.
Every questionnaire I get, every email I get... You know, from a politician, what's the biggest issue? You know, what do you want to see changed? It's always the same thing. Always. Ibogaine. Make it legal.
And if you keep posting it and keep saying it,
eventually somebody's going
to
listen.
They're not going to be able to ignore it anymore.
Eventually. Eventually.
Let's hope.
Well, Todd is actually starting the movie that we were making, Search for the Soul.
Mm-hmm.
So... hopefully that'll definitely get some stuff going.
Yeah, definitely. And I already know everyone at work, they've been waiting. You know what I mean? They want to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know a lot of people who would.
Yeah.
And I know that they'll see it and they'll share it on their Facebooks and then their friends will share that.
And that's really what we have to hope for, right, at this point is, I mean, because like I said, if you know there's something that can help your loved one, you're not going to, it won't matter if it's illegal.
Mm-hmm. You know, it won't. And, you know, like, unfortunately, like, that's a risk you're going to have to take.
Mm-hmm. The way I figured it.
You gotta balance out what's more important, your loved one's life.
Mm-hmm.
Or possibly going to jail.
And I really don't think you would go to jail.
No, I don't either.
I think if you took a jury trial over a judge and 12 people, your peers stood there, at least half of them, if not more, at least half of them had been affected by addiction.
Mm-hmm. In some way.
And they're never going to convict me.
Or anyone else, really.
That's just the way I feel about it.
And if they do, they're fucking stupid.
And
I'll help that person.
I find it very hard to believe that a jury of 12 people would convict somebody for bringing Ibogaine in to save your loved one's life.
Mm.
But it was totally worth the risk.
I think it was, too.
Yeah.
But you gotta get caught. You have to be caught doing it
yeah.
and getting it in order to get in trouble.
But, yeah.
But otherwise, prove it. I've said it, but people lie all the time. Prove that I did it. You know?
I told everybody that I had it right in my kitchen. It was across the street when we were at MV. Nobody wants to convict you for that. You know?
They don't.
It's not something...
Not in a society and in a time in the world where, like, everyone is losing people.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't discriminate. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just because you're a fucking judge... Or just because you're, you know, the CEO of a company, that doesn't mean anything.
Mm.
Addiction doesn't see that. They see,
When there's Narcan...
A new target? Let's go.
When there's Narcan trainings and your local pizzerias have Narcan, you know there's an issue. Something needs to be done. A better solution needs to be explored.
Mm-hmm. And I think that this is probably the best bet.
I really believe it. I really do. I think that, you know, we need to get rid of the synthetic heroines and start focusing on root medicine.
Mm-hmm.
You
and
know,
getting rid of the drug medicine.
Absolutely.
It's not even medicine. It's drugs.
It is. So we want you guys all... Now, while we're waging war on heroin, we're also waging war on hunger, as he so nicely pointed out. So join us Sunday, April 28th between 12 and 4 at the Central New York Veterans Outreach Center on 726 Washington Street in Utica, and bring your canned goods
and clothes and whatever.
Anything. But seriously, if any one of you has any questions, please hit me or Emily up on Facebook. Text me. My number's all over the place. Email
Mine's
me.
Mine's not. I'm not putting mine out there.
Yeah, that's all right.
You can message me on Facebook and I'll give it to you.
But seriously, any questions you have, let us know. We're always happy to talk about this to anybody.
And don't be afraid to reach out either. Like, I know a lot of people are, like, worried about stigma. Anyone who reaches out to me who doesn't want anything out there to be known, I'm not going to say a word. Like, I'm
never.
Not a therapist. I'm not under legal oath to be confidential, but... I know that I was embarrassed about it for a while, so just don't be afraid and reach out. I won't say a word to anybody.
Well, I was
you.
A bartender for a long time, so bartender's oath.
Mm.
You can definitely reach out to me. Not a word will be said to anybody ever.
Mm-hmm.
But this is available, and it works.
Yep. And so. If you need any proof, just go through my Facebook, look at my old pictures, and tell me how different I look.
Yeah. Incredibly different.
I've shown my managers at work, and they're like, that's not even you.
No, your skin was really gray. Your eyes were dead.
Mm. I had
you did not look good.
I was really sick. I always had, like, fucking cuts all over my face and, like, sores and stuff.
Yeah.
It just wasn't a good look.
No.
You know, and if you ever have any doubt in yourself that you can't do it, look at me, because I was really fucking bad, and I did it, so.
Yeah, there's always hope, and there's always help, you know. Ibogaine can just be another tool in that big picture that can just get you over the edge, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, we want to wish you all a happy Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully nobody you love is suffering. But if they are, look up Ibogaine.
Ibogaworld.com.
Yeah, it's a great resource. They have a lot of information on there.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see you next Tuesday. Bye.
This has been Home Free with Adeline Van Dyke, sponsored by the Property Sisters of Mohawk Valley, a member of Weikert Realtors. Like and follow them on social media. Interested in buying or selling a home? Call 315-601-9630.
Disruption Network and First Source Federal Credit Union have teamed up to help support the Central New York Veterans Outreach Center Sunday, April 28th from noon till 4 p.m. Located at the Veterans Outreach Center, 726 Washington Street in Utica. There will be food, live entertainment, raffles, live podcasting from the D, and an appearance by Audie from the Utica Commons. We are looking for donations of clothes, non-perishable food items, furniture, toiletries, hygiene products, or a minimal cash donation of $5 at the door day of event. All ages are welcome. For more information on donation, drop-off locations, and entertainment lineup, please check out DisruptionNetwork.net. Disrupting Hunger, Sunday, April 28th, brought to you by First Source Federal Credit Union.
Tax season is here, and First Source wants to help you be prepared. Our friends at Furley, Moran, Freer, and ESA have given us some great tax tips to share. Read the blog at fsource.org for helpful answers to your tax questions and feel better prepared before you file. First Source members can also receive a discount on TurboTax software. Be ready for tax season with help from your friends. File smarter, live smarter with First Source. Membership requirements apply. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey, baseball fans, are you counting down the days to opening day? Well, Disruption Network has you covered. The Baseline, the D's own baseball podcast, is back with Season 2 and all new episodes all season long, Sunday nights, 7:30 p.m. on the D. Get your baseball fix as JP and SPG run down the news and notes around Major League Baseball. Get fantasy tips, player rankings, team previews, interviews, and more. You can catch The Baseline and all of Disruption Network's programming by checking out DisruptionNetwork.net, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, YouTube, Facebook, and Stitcher. Keep it inside The Baseline all season long, only on the D.
Hey, it's Cassidy, and you're listening to Disruption Network.
So you just bought your dream home, and now it's time to move. Let's face it, nobody likes to move. All the packing, unpacking, lifting, upstairs, downstairs, and broken everything, including your back. Let the professionals at EJA Moving Company take all the stress and pain out of your move. Competitively priced moving, relocation services, office moves, and complete packing and unpacking services. They work with everybody to make it simple and easy for you to move and relocate. Call EJA Moving Company at 315-335-0516. When it's time to relocate, have EJA Moving do all the work for you. Hit them up online, ejamoving.com.
Hey, Disruption Network, this is Mike Sacco, the general manager at Nye Volkswagen of Rome. If you don't know me by name, it's only because you have not received the best deal. There's only one reason to leave Utica, and that's to come see me in Rome and get the best deal on your next new, pre-owned, or certified VW. Mention that you heard this ad from Disruption Network and receive $250 off your next vehicle purchase. You'll know why our customers say, I love my Nye VW. Come see us at 5865 Rome Taberg Road in Rome or visit us online at nyevwofrome.com.
The Property Sisters of the Mohawk Valley was born when three top producing agents with over 25 years of combined experience selling real estate joined forces to take real estate to the next level. We practice with honesty, integrity, and the knowledge to help make the buying and selling process easy and stress-free for all of our clients. We pledge to always make our clients our top priority from start to finish and even after the house is closed. We will always be a valued resource for information and assistance for our buyers and sellers. Our customers over the years have become not only past clients, but great friends. As we join hands together as the Property Sisters of the Mohawk Valley, we look forward to serving our clients and our community and making a positive difference. You can reach us at 315-601-9630 for all of your real estate needs.
The Disruption Network is making moves. For upcoming events, news, interviews, and new daily programming, keep in the loop with us at DisruptionNetwork.net. Like, follow, and subscribe to all our social media. And check out all our podcasts on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. Get up on the D, DisruptionNetwork.net.